Hey friends, and welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and this is episode 193, talking all about body image grief with Brianna Campos. Now, I know you may be thinking, body image grief, that sounds deep, that sounds morbid. We think of grief, we think of losing a loved one. And the reality is there's so many different layers and complexities when it comes to body image. So I really wanted to bring in an expert, one of my favorite experts, to talk to you on today's episode, Brianna Campos. So Bri is actually the founder of Body Image with Bri. She is a licensed mental health counselor based in New Jersey, but she also does a lot of work virtually helping not just clients, but also practitioners. So if you're a dietitian or a fitness professional listening, there's a lot that you can learn as well. As a body image educator and the founder of Body Image with Bri, she's very passionate about all things body image and practices through the lens of health at every size and intuitive eating. She utilizes a weight-inclusive approach, and she really does an amazing job. She's a wealth of knowledge because she combines both her clinical skills and the work that she's done out in the field, but also with her lived experience to really teach others how to maneuver through their own unique body image journeys. So I don't want to hold up any more time because I want to dig into this episode. It's going to be so good. I know you're freaking going to love it. So definitely give her a follow on Instagram at Body Image with Bri. Check out her website. She's got so much to offer. And even just by following her, adding her into your feed, I know seeing those little nuggets that she shares on Instagram are going to be life-changing for you. All right, onto the show. And as always, if you enjoy this episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and even better yet, share this on Instagram, tag at KT Haake, as well as at Body Image with Bri, and let us know what you think. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Haake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about the relationship of food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Bri, happy Friday. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So excited to have you. I have been so looking forward to this conversation because body image, there's so many layers to it, so much that we can talk about. But let's start by sharing with us your story. What is your food and your personal body image story?
Yeah. So I love telling my story. I think it's one that's probably really relatable. I have always identified as living life in a larger body. I don't think I was always the largest body, but I was always in a larger body than my peers. And from a very early age, I knew that that was wrong or bad. And the reason I know that was because of the adults in my life. Now, I always put this caveat that I know they did the best they could with the information they had at the time, and even still, right, Maya Angelou, when we know better, we do better. Mm-hmm. So I really struggled with my body image for a majority of my life. And it was something I was always interested in. And the way I sought to overcome my body image issues was through manipulating my body size through extreme exercise and dieting. And what I found was that every time I would go on a diet, I gave it my all. I gave it 100%. I would give it everything I've got. I would stay the course for a long time until inevitably it would fail. And in that failure, I thought it was my failure. I thought it was my own lack of willpower and control. And I subsequently also, you know, was going to school for my master's in counseling. And was forced to, I was mandated to go to counseling. And so I've shared this, if you've heard my story before, it was really in that therapy that I realized my own cognitive dissonance, or we should say, the noticing that my thoughts and actions didn't line up. Mm. around body size, that I had a separate standard for myself than I did for other people, which was very much mirrored in how I worked with clients with eating disorders, first an internship and then a job. And
I don't mean to interrupt you, but did you know what area like you wanted to specialize in with counseling? Or was this just, I'm checking the boxes, I got to do what I got to do to get my degree?
I always knew that I loved body image. And I actually, what I really loved was self-esteem work, which is very much tied into body image. Mm-hmm. And I always had strong self-efficacy. I always had, like, I knew that there were things I was good at, but my body was the one area where I was like, oh, this is the one area I fail in. This is the one area I used to call it my Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. It was my one weakness. And I always wanted to work with body image, but I always thought working with body image, I had to be the after photo. Like, I can't work with body image until my body looks differently. And so through therapy, that's where I realized, oh, I am thinking the only way to gain peace about my own body image is through a smaller body.
It's huge.
And so, long story short, through intuitive eating and health at every size and creating language around body image that I just feel like nobody was using, helped me make peace with my own
body. I have goosebumps just hearing your story. I love that you say language, because one reason why I am just so excited about this conversation is because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around the language with body image. So can we start there by just, how do you define body image?
Yeah. I think that there's a misconception that body image is what you see when you look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. That is just one aspect of body image. Body image is actually so much more. I think body image is not just how you see yourself when you look in the mirror, but how you feel about the way that you are seen in society, right? I think body image is also the behaviors connected to what you do around the way you believe about your body. So really, I think it comes down to more of the beliefs that you have about your body size and what that represents.
Yeah. And it's like you said, it's so much more complex with that. And people think of it as just this one layer, but it's interesting that you attach the behaviors. So what might some of the behaviors, what does that mean?
Sure. So let's use the example of if I go to put on a pair of pants and my pants don't fit and my body gets filled with this heat and the narrative is, oh no, or can we curse?
Absolutely. Explicit on our podcast when it airs.
Yeah, call those like oh shit moments, right? Where you're like, oh shit, right? Where there is just fear that's happening. And then what does that cause you to do? Does then that say, okay, well, it's just because I have, you know, my body is just out of control. I just need to fill in whatever distorted behavior here. I need to just cut out this food, or I need to exercise this much, whatever that looks like. That is a behavior that is clearly connected to how you feel about your body. Mm-hmm.
When you were seeing a counselor in therapy, was that something that this therapist like specialized in? Or like, talk to us about that, because I personally had a clinical experience working with a client who was working with a quote unquote body image therapist, and the body image therapist recommended weight loss. And it was just, I have no words. So I'm curious from your experience, right? Because now you are in the work that you do. Like, what was that piece like? We're kind of backtracking a little bit, but.
No, it's good. It's good. So I always say that therapists are the worst clients. Because I would like go in. I'd be like, all right, listen, I know what I need to work on. This is what we're working on. And this is how we're going to go about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I had a plan, right? It was edited in my mind of like, this is what we're working on. And body image wasn't even on my radar. Mm. because at the time I was on a super restrictive diet. So society was celebrating my body. I was celebrating all of the sacrifices that I was making. And we actually started talking about dating. And somehow it kept going back to body image. And I was like, no, you are not understanding.
Stop. Like, we're not going there.
No, like my body image is fine. Like we're focusing on this. And so she said, just humor me. And she doesn't specialize in this. She's just a fantastic clinician. And she saw past my bullshit. She saw past the edited version of what I brought to the table. And I seek to find compassion with that younger version of myself because she really just thought she knew what she was doing. She needed to feel that control. Mm-hmm. And so I have compassion for her, but I'm also grateful that my therapist was able to see right past that. And, you know, we were talking about dating and then somehow my body image just kept nudging its way in. Mm-hmm. And she somehow, I guess I must've said something along the lines of, well, I am doing this for health.
Mm.
And she says, well, that's, you know, that's fantastic, which was usually a normal response. She asked me, what does health mean to you? And I've never been asked that before. I was like, well, okay. Like, I'm sure this is just like common information, but I was like, I think I said something along the lines of, if I had to put a definition to it, health is not feeling out of control with food, that I would daily move my body and eat fruits and vegetables every day. And she goes, okay, so then you are healthy. And I was like, no. I was like, I also need to be thin. And she said, okay, so your weight is important to you. And I said, no, weight's not important to me, but I also need to be thin. And this is where she highlighted the cognitive dissonance. I was getting mad. I was like,
you're not hearing me.
What are you not getting about this? God bless her. She's a great human being. And she was like, I'm just trying to make it fit because you're saying it's not important. Yet, you know, in your mind that to achieve health, you need to be in a smaller body. And when I left and I really thought about it, I was like, wow, it's not so much health that I care about. It's acceptance that if I don't, nobody else will see me as healthy if my body doesn't change. And from there, that thread is just connected to so many wounds.
Yes.
If you can. Yeah.
So yeah. That kind of takes us to this next piece, I guess you could say, of body image is this body grief. So talk to us, what is body grief? Because it sounds like in that moment, that was a big turning point of this journey.
Yeah. So if you look up the definition of grief in the dictionary, it says deep sorrow. And when you look up sorrow in the dictionary, it says anything that causes you loss that also causes you distress. And when I think about what it was like to let go of the thin ideal, what it was like to have to lay to rest that my body might never be the size that is quote unquote acceptable. The only feeling I could identify it as was grief.
Mm-hmm.
Because the loss caused me distress. And so I, from a clinical standpoint, really was able to understand, wow, not only is this discomfort, but it's also causing me distress. So if we go back to mm-hmm. the genes, I put on those pair of jeans. It's not just that it's caused me discomfort that they don't fit. It causes me distress because the jeans don't fit because of the narrative that's playing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And because that narrative is an old wound of the doctors are going to be mad at you. Someone's going to be upset with you. Like
so many different experiences.
In that moment, it's not just putting on jeans. It's so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And how we can identify this out is like, okay, like if I put on a pair of shoes and they don't fit, I don't feel that same shame. So, because it's like shoes, right? Shoes don't matter, right?
Yeah.
But yet around our body size, around our clothing, there is a narrative that we hold on to that if it changes, we try to identify the core belief. And so for me, grieving the thin ideal, grieving the fact that this body was the body I probably was going to reside in for the rest of my life, there was a sense of loss.
Loss of what?
Yeah. So it wasn't just the loss of the acceptance of my peers. It was, I thought I was going to miss out on things. Mm. Like I thought I wasn't going to be able to find a partner, that no one was going to love me. I thought my colleagues would never respect me because of my body size. I thought clients would look at me and be like, how can you help me? You can't figure it out for yourself, but you're going to help me. And what I realized through my own experience with grief is I was so desperately seeking the acceptance of other people, but I never accepted myself. And when you look at acceptance through the stages of grief, acceptance isn't like, yay, acceptance.
Woohoo.
Right? Woohoo. It's not like, yay, this person is dead. It's this person is dead. Like, I accept this. And so reframing, what does body acceptance look like? It no longer meant I have to love what I look like, but instead I love who I am and this is how my body looks.
That's interesting that you bring up that term body acceptance and reframing it. So how are some ways that people think body, or, you know, kind of like, I guess these two different sides of body acceptance?
Yeah. So, well, first let's start, right, is usually it's like we go to body love right away. And then it's like, well, maybe body love is too hard. So let's just go to body acceptance. Body acceptance is not a stage that you arrive at. It's not a check mark. It's not like, oh, yes, this is a body acceptance. Body acceptance, there's a misconception that I thought body acceptance meant that I was going to like all of the parts of my body. Or that I was even more so like, not even going to love or like, but that I was going to accept them with like joy, right?
Yeah, like everything's okay. And
yes, yes. Guess what? There are days my double chin still grieves me. There are days where my lower belly grieves me. But the difference is it no longer plays a part in whether I accept myself. Like I love myself, not for what my body looks like or doesn't look like. And that to me is true body acceptance, is even when you like it or you don't like it.
I so appreciate you saying that even now there's days, because I think that's such a common misbelief. Like you said, that you arrive and you check a box. And I know for many of our listeners, they're very all or nothing, black or white, very driven, goal oriented, like, if I can just check off all these other areas, why can't I check off this area in my body? So why is this body grief step, you know, and I hate to even use that word step, because like you said, it's not just, okay, next step. Why is this piece so important?
And a way you could rephrase it would be like this layer, right?
Layer, yes. That's great.
This layer. And I often refer to body image like an archaeological dig. As opposed to a journey, because journey amplifies that there's an arrival, as opposed to there's just learning. Like we're just going to continue to keep learning. And when you get stuck and you hit something, it's like, oh, that's information, rather than what's wrong with me? Why can't I go deeper into this? This body grief is pinnacle to body autonomy, because you cannot get to acceptance without grief. It would be like, the analogy I would come up with is, if you experienced grief, if you lost someone in your life, and you just wanted to skip all of the, you know, denial, anger, depression, bargaining, all of that, and then just go right to the acceptance, that would be great. But that's not how it works.
Yeah. It's so interesting, I think, for anybody listening, to compare it to if you've experienced the loss of, I think often we think of a loved one, but like you said, it can apply in so many different areas. So what are some of those common barriers in particular that you help clients work through? Let me ask you this too. Is it, because I'm sure people are wondering, how long does this take, right? Like what's the average, like process, you know, we're kind of working together, right?
We're going to do this for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I run a body grievers group, and It's a 6-week group. And I tell every time, I'm like, please don't expect to fix your body grief in 6 weeks. And I know I say it, and I know, like, they all at the end, they'll usually be like, I know you said it,
but
I thought it was going to be different. Mm. I was like, I thought it was gonna be like, yeah, but I got it.
Yeah.
Right. So how long does it take? And then what are the hurdles? I think that if we could mirror this after intuitive eating, there's always just learning. There's like, it's always learning. And what happens is if there's all these different voices happening in your head, and if you have like your nutrition informant, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, I noticed that. Oh, I noticed that voice. Okay. I need to come in with my food anthropologist and throw in something else here. I need to present it in a different way. The same happens when it comes to our body is when that, like, I refer to Brené Brown's gremlins, mm-hmm. The idea of gremlins being the voice of shame. And when you can dialogue with those gremlins of, hold on, we want to change this pattern. We don't want to be in this cyclical pattern of, I feel discomfort in my body. The discomfort causes me distress. The distress causes me to do something radical. And then I end up back in this discomfort, right? Like we're trying to break the cycle.
It's like that same cycle. Yeah. With dieting.
100%. And so the clinical word is neuroplasticity, right? Is we are trying to create new neural pathways that instead of I put on the jeans and I feel shame, can we break that down? Can we break these moments down into microseconds to figure out what's happening in real time so that it no longer is the narrative on play? Common hurdles that I feel like there are a few. Most common hurdles are health, but I want to be healthy, right? I it's fine. Like body love, great, but I know that I'm going to feel comfortable in a smaller body. Mm-hmm. Hurdle is love. I can love myself, but I'm afraid someone else isn't going to love me. Yeah. So those are probably the two biggest ones.
Can we dive into those a little bit more? Because I hear that all the time, health. But right. Or maybe even somebody can work past that. Okay. I hear you. I can be healthy at any size, right? They hear Hayes. I can be healthy at any size, but I'm not comfortable. So like, where does somebody even start with that? And where does that come from with this thin ideal?
Yeah. Yeah. So first, right, it'd be correcting that it's not health at any size. It's health at every size. Mm. And so that health, like, even if we were to use extreme, somebody who's emaciated is not healthy, but that person has the ability to work towards health, mm-hmm. no matter what size body they're at. And so I would start with someone of, well, first I would validate and I would say, I hear you as someone who has experienced a lot of shame from the doctors. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get the desire to want to have a good report. Mm-hmm. I would ask you what health looks like, right? So, you know, 5 years ago when I told my, you know, five years ago, when I told my therapist that my definition of health was, you know, eating fruits and vegetables and exercising and not feeling out of control with food. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that would still apply today, but in such a different way. So now my health is, how am I regulating my emotions? Mm-hmm. How is anxiety showing up in my life? And how am I taking care of myself? What does my self-care look like? How do I take care? What does my self-talk look like? Mm-hmm. How am I talking to myself? My definition of health has expanded.
Yeah, so much more encompassing of different aspects.
Right. Which I recommend Body Respect for that, because they talk about how dieting and exercise makes up 30, and dieting, I'm saying, like, what you eat, mm-hmm. what you eat, and how much you move only makes up about 30% of your health, which means 70% is coming from other places.
That's so, gosh, powerful. Just that statistic right there, because we see the opposite on social media, from doctors, right? Like, I don't want to say that from doctors, but just in general, in our society, we hear the opposite of that. You know, I often hear that term thrown around, like, well, it's really 80-20. It's really 80% what you eat, 20% of how you move.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I would do if somebody comes to me with that hurdle, one, I'm going to make space for you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a visual. Your viewers won't be able to see this, but if you could imagine holding your health in your hand, closed fist, and you're like, I want health and I want it this way. Mm-hmm. All I'm asking is, do you want health and can you open your fist, right, to the idea or the possibility that maybe it doesn't look the way that you think it does? Mm. For example, what if you could achieve health, quote unquote, but your body size doesn't change? In fact, your body gets bigger. Would you still want health?
And how do people often respond to that?
It's a toss bag. Yeah. There are some people like, yeah, like if you could tell me my A1C would be better, you could tell me that my mobility would be better, and you're telling me my body might not even get smaller, but might get bigger, but you're telling me my health would improve? Yeah, maybe. And then I have other people that are like, no, 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 no. So let's go down the no path, right? What does, if you don't get the smaller body and you don't get the health that you are thinking it looks like in your brain, then what does that mean? Like, why is that so bad? And I think it comes down to this core belief of, I want to feel accepted. I want to feel like, I want to not feel like a failure.
All those things that you described that was at the root of what you were looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in the largest body that I've ever been in, and I'm the healthiest that I've ever been. And I still have mobility issues. I have more body pain than I've had before. But one, I go based off of my blood work. Mm-hmm. Two, I go based off the consistency of how much I go to the doctor to regulate my meds, to how connected I am to my body, to being able to actually sift through like, oh, you know what? Like, I was compensating over here because of this problem over here. So for example, it wasn't until I started intuitively eating that I even connected to the fact that I struggle with anxiety. Mm. I always just thought, this is how people live. I was like, this is just life. The norm.
We're all stressed.
It's the norm. Like, and if you would have asked me, so a Likert scale on a scale of 1 to 10, like, oh, well, how anxious do you normally feel? I would have said 2 or 3, and then situations 8. And as I started intuitively eating, as I started listening to my body, I realized that that was a bunch of bullshit, that I was like, wow, I'm freaking out because I can't find a parking spot. Like, this is not, but it was my brain that was just the automatic response of, we are in this trauma response. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking medication and I realized, I was functioning at an 8 all of the time. So there's no wonder why my body was doing the things that it was doing, because it was trying to protect itself.
Yeah.
Psst. It's me, Katie. And in case you haven't already noticed, I kind of care about you getting results. Now, I'm not talking about results as far as body fat composition or the number on the scale, but I'm talking about implementing the things that you are learning here each and every week. Head on over to Facebook and just search Fit Friends Tribe to request to join our group. This is a free Facebook community where we talk about the podcast episodes each week, and I give you action steps on how to implement what it is that we talked about, so that you're not just listening, learning, and absorbing information, but you're part of that top percent, that top 2% that actually takes action and changes their life. So facebook.com, search Fit Friends Tribe. I'm going to ask you a few questions to make sure you're not some weirdo from Antarctica, and we'll let you in. See you there. All right, back to the show.
So let's go there a little bit. You know, I think so many people are probably listening and they hear, okay, yeah, I understand. But there's still this layer of fear. And I think, we talked about how it goes back to that acceptance. But gosh, what do people do when they feel they truly do have that fear, those deep beliefs of, but I need to be smaller? Like that, I don't know if there's another better word to explain it. Is that fear, that denial? What stage is that, you know?
I think that when people see a dietitian, they're still in that bargaining stage of like, it's going to be different for me. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, health and exercise, what do you mean, blah, 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 but it's going to work for me. And it's going to be the next diet that like finally worked. when they come to see me, that's gone. they're in the depression of, I can't believe this is my body. Mm-hmm. I can't believe this. Yeah, that's, I think that is the grief, that if you cannot move into the fear, it is because you don't want to feel that hopelessness. And I equate it to, you know, that feeling, I'm terrified of heights, like deathly, like I can't even climb a ladder, like not even like a two step. No,
I'm like, no. I love roller coasters, but put me on a set of bleachers and I hate it. So I don't know, but I relate. I'm
just going to use a roller coaster as an example, and even more so because I hate heights. You know, that feeling when you're at the top of the roller coaster, yup, and you are terrified of what is, you're like, oh, this is it. I'm going to die. This is it. And then as soon as you get there, you're like, that sucked, or like, okay, it wasn't that bad, right? Like, but it wasn't as bad as you're creating it in your mind.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
That's where you're living right now, is you cannot imagine what is on the other side of that, because there's no memory pairing. And I mean, like I rode a roller coaster last year before COVID. Yeah. So October of last year, for the first time in years. And I hated it. But the worst part was at the, like, was all right before.
Can you explain what memory pairing is? You talked about this in your story the other day too. So, and I talked to us about what that means.
I don't know if it's a thing or if I made it up.
I like it though. I get it. Okay, I like it.
So when I was experiencing grief for the first time, and I've shared very openly about my experience with grief in my real life and losing a loved one, I remember feeling sadness and anger and depression and confusion and overwhelm all at one time. And I could not think of a time in my life where I felt all of those things at once. And when I started to really think through of like, oh, you know what? Like, I remember not getting into the choir when I was in high school and feeling something similar to this, but I didn't know what was called grief. Or the first time I was rejected by a boy, and, you know, my 16-year-old heart just broke into a million pieces, and remembering that feeling of wanting to crawl out of my skin. And at that moment, having nothing to compare it to, it felt horrible. And there's no silver lining how horrible that feels. But when you have a memory pairing, you have something to be like, oh, this, I know where this is familiar from.
Or I made it. I survived that.
You have no idea what's on the other side. So your mind is like, this is as bad as it gets. That's not how emotions work, right? You don't just live one place. Some days are good. Some days are not good. Some days are filled with joy, and some days are filled with sadness. When we are sitting in grief, we feel stuck. We feel like this is where I'm going to be forever. And I often feel like it's that roller coaster feeling of, I don't want to lean into this because I'm afraid of what's down there. I don't want to know what's at the bottom. But as somebody who has gone to the underbelly of the beast and come out the other side, I am telling you, that is how you move forward.
Or you'll feel stuck. You'll continue to feel stuck and feel that at the top of the roller coaster, that anticipation, that feeling of standing in line, not even on the roller coaster yet.
And I'll give you another example, right? So you think about the ocean. Right. And when the tide pulls you in, right. And you're going to resist the tide. You're like, nah, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. You can do it. You can absolutely do it, but you're going to exhaust yourself. And so what grief looks like is just leaning in the surrender of, okay, I'm not fighting this anymore. And I'm going to let the waves do what they want. Eventually it's going to throw you back on shore. And the fear is it's going to kill me. And right, I've done this exercise a couple times with people, but if you hold your breath, right, and I ask you to hold your breath for 30 seconds, it might feel like you're going to die. It might really feel that way, but that doesn't mean you're going to die.
I've had goosebumps this whole time. I just think there's so many people that struggle with this. And the reality is that you don't have to live in that fear. You don't have to be there. And my heart just breaks, you know, for I say women, but really it's men and women. It's all folks of every shape and size and color and background. So what tips do you have for somebody who is listening to us again, they hear this, but they, you know, if you were to ask them right now, they loathe, and I use that word because I've heard it before. I hate my body. I loathe my body. Where do they start? I know it feels heavy. It feels heavy because it is heavy.
And that's grief. That mm-hmm. is grief. And if you were to imagine, right, anytime you've gone to a funeral or wake up somebody and that heaviness that you feel and the wanting to fix it and knowing other than bringing that person back to life, there's literally nothing that's going to change this. So what can I do? I can sit in that suck with you. Mm-hmm. And that's where we start is it's not fun. It's not a fix. It is just, it's just being. And if you are listening to this and you're like, everything you're saying, I'm tracking with you. I feel like you're telling my story. I remember feeling hopeless. My therapist, when we got down to the bottom of the, right, like when we reached, it's actually really the top of the, and I was afraid to look down. She said, I would diagnose you with depression in the area of body image. She was like, there's just this pervasive hopelessness, which now I identify as body dysmorphia, right? Which is the idea that something is wrong with your body and that needs to be fixed in order for you to feel differently about it. And if I could just mirror back quickly to my real life example of grief, I remember fighting the tide. I didn't want to cry. I was like, I'm fine. It's okay. Like, I got it. It's okay. And then it would accost me. And then I would be, you know, I remember being in the grocery store and like looking at broccoli and then all of a sudden just started crying. I was like, I don't know where this is coming from. Because the more I resisted, right, the more it persisted. And I remember the first time I just let myself cry and I was afraid. I was terrified. I was terrified that if I started, it would never stop. But that's not how emotions work. Mm-hmm. That's not how emotions work. There's a wonderful TED Talk by Dr. Susan David. And she says, I have clients that tell me, I don't want to feel hurt. I don't want to feel rejection. I don't want to feel loss. And she says, I understand, but those are dead people's goals. Only dead people don't experience loss and grief and sadness and rejection. And that because, and this is me, because you can feel that, you can also feel joy and happiness and acceptance if you can feel the depths of that. And that is why we need to sit in the suck. We need to acknowledge it. We need to build our distress tolerance skills so that when we feel like we can't breathe and we can't drown, okay, let's create safety. Let's create a memory pairing. Let's dig a little bit deeper each time. And the deeper the pain is, the deeper the joy can be. Mm-hmm.
The way you describe it, it's like there is hope in the hopelessness, but you're right. Yeah. It's an area that we just want to fix.
Let's talk about hope, right? Like what is hope? And I've shared this several times. If you've heard this, me say this, I had a client who would tell me all the time, she was like, I just don't feel any hope. I feel no hope. I know it's there, but like, I just don't have access to it. And I was like, what can we do to bring in the hope? Let's bring in the hope. Let's do it. And I remember one night I stumbled into the bathroom and I didn't feel like putting on the light because the hall light was on. And I remember sitting down and the darkness consumed me. Like I was like, whoa, it is dark in here. And my eyes needed to adjust. And I was just like, wow, I couldn't even see my own hand. And after a little bit, my eyes adjusted to the darkness. And I saw this stream of light coming out from underneath the door. And I thought, that's what hope looks like. She is sitting in that darkness and she can't see it. And I'm outside in the hallway being like, it's light out. And so what I will say is rather than pulling you out into that light, I will come into that darkness with you. And if you can't see the hope, if you can't see the light, let me look at it for you. I'll hold on to it for you. Just keep looking to me.
Till your eyes adjust.
till your eyes adjust.
Ah, Bree, I have so many questions, but none at the same time. I need a help. I need a helmet.
Gotta digest it all. Yeah. Yeah.
So much for people to think about and to take in. And I so admire the, you know, I've learned from you on several webinars and just through all the work that you do. I think it's so niche and it's so needed because there's so many people, and I think clinicians too, that there's this murky area. There's this gray area of like, well, I don't want to deal with it. I'm going to pass it off and pass it off. And, or clinicians thinking that they're helping, but it's not necessarily helping. What are some of those red flags for people to look out for if they're maybe going through this and working with somebody and it's not getting better? We'll talk about how they can actually work with you in just a minute. But yes, I know. I want to give a hug.
Yeah, it's such a good question because, right, I don't think I'm going to be able to work with everybody. So I want to give tools to everyone, whether you be a clinician or a client, that you can advocate for yourself or for your clients of like, okay, how do I implement these skills? I would say red flag, weight loss. Like, okay, well, let's right. I remember that was one of the things that used to drive me insane when it would be like, there's a terminology called a bid for connection. It's John Gottman. Right. And I knew the power of vulnerability and I wanted to like connect with somebody in this. And it would be like, I would give you, I'm like a visual, like in a visual, I'm giving you this thing of like, hey, I'm feeling really uncomfortable in my body right now. And what would people do? Well, what can we do differently? And it just feels like a slap in the face of like, I take your vulnerability and poof, I kick it to the side because I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix your discomfort. Weight loss is the biggest distraction from body healing that you could ever put in because it's intentional weight loss. Let me clarify.
Yeah.
Because my body's going to do what it's going to do. My body might get bigger, it might get smaller, but if I am intentionally seeking out changing my body size, it is because I don't want to feel the discomfort that I'm currently feeling right now. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, weight loss, red flag. I love providers. I also have offers for providers, so you can tell your providers to come work with me too. Yes.
Here, I have a link for you. We'll have you all. We'll give a link in the show notes to print out Bree's like business cards and just take them to all your physicians, everybody listening around the country, please.
Because right, so one of the things is like I will hear people and I'm like, oh, I know your intentions are good, but your delivery sucks. So if somebody is like, I am just really struggling with my body image right now. And like, I just feel like I can't love my body. And it's like, well, what if we just, you know, what if we just learned like acceptance? Like, what if we just tried to accept your body? What about body peace, right? Not a red flag, maybe like a auburn flag, like not like a red flag, but just like clearly somebody who is not comfortable having the body image conversation. Mm-hmm. Other like tips and tricks I would also recommend is let's build your distress tolerance skills. When you feel, use that Likert scale. I did it right. I was trying to find a parking spot and I felt anxiety. And I said, okay, let's assess. How anxious do I feel right now? And I was like an 8. And I said, is this causing me distress? And I said, yes, this is causing me distress because I'm like, why am I feeling distressed about a parking spot? And what I realize now is it was just a wound. It's a trauma wound that my body was going into fight or flight or freezing or fawning or whatever trauma response. But most of the time it was like, oh no, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, what do I do? And it was just used to that. It was used to being tight and tense. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I always start by asking my clients, let's work on coping skills. And I used to say, deep breathing doesn't work. I used to be like, don't tell me. I don't want to breathe. I'd be like, actually, even just try this with me now as you're listening. I was about to say I read something, but that's a lie. It was a TikTok.
Same thing, right?
I was like, I read it. And I was like, no. Where they said, if you take two quick inhales and then an exhale, that it actually resets. So if you do it,
Oh.
Even feeling the power of that breath. There's an entire line of a theory of counseling that says we can trick our bodies into being calm through breath work. It's biofeedback that our breath actually controls so much, and that you don't realize how much you're not breathing until you actively start breathing.
Yes. Such a good tip.
Building those coping skills, knowing, having an arsenal of coping skills or a toolbox of, okay, you know, I'm going clothes shopping. What can I do to prepare me for these moments before clothes shopping rather than just going in? So for me, it is not intentionally looking at the smaller size. Like now I just go in and I'm like, I'm going to just grab a couple sizes, but I'm going to go with a bigger size so that I don't have this narrative playing of like, maybe,
maybe this time. Yeah.
Maybe this time it's that's still that, like that bargaining of like, maybe I'm wrong. Doing mirror work, looking at yourself in the mirror, looking at pictures. Your body accosts you because you have no connection to it. You are not looking at it. Maybe that feels like a 10. Maybe we don't do that. Maybe you just start paying attention to what feels good. I sit right in front of a window. Like right now it's snowing. I love being able to look out the window. It's this tiny little window though. In the morning, the sun streams on my face. Those are moments I feel good in my body. When I drink a hot cup of coffee and it's warm on the way down, those are good feelings in my body. Building up that list of, hey, this felt like good connection. So that when it doesn't feel good, we don't judge it. We're not like, oh, and I'm bad. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, that didn't feel good. That didn't feel good. That's information.
Noted. Mental note. Yeah.
Mental note. Mental note.
You are a wealth of information. Tell us more about your Body Grievers group and how people can join. Because obviously people are listening and they're like, yes, Brie, you're talking about me.
I have 4 offerings this year for the Body Grievers group. So I'm not sure when this is going to air, but I have 2 more groups left for the year. I think two. I'm not sure.
It's hard to believe. We're almost in March at the time of this recording.
I know. Yeah. So there's another group that's going to launch April 2021, and then one that'll launch in the summer. And then hopefully for 2022, it's going to look a little bit different, but it's going to be still an offering on body grief. But currently the offer is a 6-week group where you get to come together with like-minded people to sit in the suck of your body grief. I say this is for the person who feels like, I'm ready to reject diet culture, but I don't feel yet like I belong in the body positive health at every size community. I'm in no man's land and I just need a space to feel less alone. So if that resonates with you, then this group is for you. It is a 3-figure offer. So if that's not within your budget, I also have a course. It's a mini body grievers bundle, which is a little bit less expensive. That's a self-study. You get to do that by yourself. You listen to the recording. There are worksheets. It's all encompassing. So that's my current offers for the client, or I call them super special people.
Super special people. Well, we will be sure to link to all those in the show notes. And where can people find you? Where do you love to hang out?
I'm on Instagram way too much. So come hang out with me on Instagram. You and me both. And I am in process of working on a website. So at some point, bodyimagewithbrie.com will be a thing. But right now I say, come hang out with me on Instagram. I typically go live at least once a week. And yeah, and I'm on way too much. And I'm always in my stories. I do lots of interactions in my stories. And my hope is that I can be, you know, that tunnel guide, that when you're in that dark tunnel and it's dark and you feel alone, maybe we don't look at the end of the tunnel. Maybe you just look to me.
Goosebumps. Oh, okay. Last thing I want to ask you before we wrap up, it's Friday and here on Fit Friends Happy Hour, we just love to celebrate. So what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Oh, the best thing that's happened to me. I feel like there were things. Valentine's Day happened this week, right?
Did it? It was Sunday. So technically, yes. Sunday. Yes.
Yeah. So both my boys, my dad and my brother, they spoiled me so much. Got me flowers and chocolate. It was I felt so loved. And I'm a gifts and a words of affirmation. So like, my dad wrote me a card. Let's see, is it over here? Just so simple, but it's just the little things. They just mean so much to me. I was like crying. I was like, I feel so loved.
I love that. So, love.
I would say that.
Love.
The best thing.
Love.
Yes. And then my goddaughter, she turned 4 this week. So she's coming over tonight for a sleepover. So I don't anticipate sleeping.
So fun.
I love her though. Her and her brother are coming. I'm so excited.
My goddaughter has two sisters, and we're getting ready to move next month. And that's the one thing I told my friend. I was like, I can't wait for them to come over to they call me Godmother Katie. Godmother Katie's house for a sleepover. They're about that same age too. So it's so fun being a godmother and an auntie
is the best. And so I was on the phone with her on her birthday. We were FaceTiming. And I was like, okay, Amperi has to go back to work. And she was like, no. I was like, I have to go to work. She was, but I love you. I was like, okay, I never need to work again.
You're right. Fine. Shut it down. That's all I need. thank you so much for your time, your energy, your knowledge. And for anybody listening, be sure to share this, tag us on Instagram, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Katie.
I know your brain hurts from listening to all the awesome knowledge bombs on today's episode, but listen, you're really smart. So why aren't you subscribed to Fit Friends Happy Hour yet? Did you know that a new episode drops every single Monday? And by subscribing, you get those episodes downloaded straight to your phone so you won't miss a thing. You won't want to miss next week's episode where we're diving deeper into body image and talking more about your story. How does this connect to today's episode? Can't wait to talk to you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.